the purpose of the Christian faith is clear and simple. It is not an evacuation plan up to heaven, but it is a transformation plan for us here on earth. The strategy is actually pretty straightforward. It is built on helping people become loving human beings and creating a loving society based on the loving example of Jesus Christ. So we've had about 2,000 years to create a loving society. How do you think we're doing? From my perspective, things seem to be a little shaky. Why do you think that is? What I would like to talk about today is repentance, a change in the way we think, the purification of the human mind. Now, I once heard the Bible described as follows. So if you're not a biblical scholar, this might be a little helpful. God creates, God calls the people to obedience, and for a while, the people, you know, react positively. But then they fall away. And when they fall away, they suffer the consequences of being alienated from God. So God calls the people back to obedience. The people follow, at least for a while. And then the people fall away. And unfortunately, they suffer the consequences of being alienated from God. And so the cycle continues, right? It is of my opinion that people of faith today, Christians in particular, are on the stage of actually falling away, becoming alienated from God and God's desires for us in this world. As Malachi the prophet predicted, and he declared actually 2,500 years ago, the consequences will be severe, whether individually or in society at large, unless we are purified, just as silver must be purified from the ore in order for it to be of any use. And for those of you who know about the purification of precious metals, it can be pretty laborious. Now, this purification process is long overdue for many, including our elected officials and institutions whose inner spirituality has fallen. This inner spirituality is fallen because their policies are based on power and greed, thereby abusing the authority they have been given. We are now living in a nation where power is hoarded, money is loved, nationalism is honored, and lies are becoming the norm. It feels as if our democracy is dying in darkness, leaving the lost, the lonely, and the left behind, whom Jesus healed and advocated for, leaving them at great risk. Now, have you ever wondered why the world continues to be so wounded and conflicted? Why there are so many wars and suffering after 2,000 years of Christianity? I mean, if Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, then why aren't things a lot better? What seems to be the stumbling block? In my opinion, the church has focused its teachings mainly on actions rather than the disciplining of the mind. We've been taught what to do and what not to do. We have the Ten Commandments with the shall and the shall nots, and yet we struggle with inner conflict between our commitment to our baptismal vows and our actual behavior. I think what is missing regarding Christian discipleship is the training of the mind. In our hearts, we already know what the right things to do, right? But our thoughts seem to have a mind of their own. The mind can sometimes be a much more powerful force than the human will. After all, thoughts matter. Every emotion you have, every action begins with a thought. Good thoughts usually perpetuate good emotions and good actions. Bad thoughts can perpetuate bad emotions and bad actions. The words you mutter to yourself and the thoughts that you dwell on have the power to encourage or discourage, to motivate or to deflate, to generate joy or generate sadness. Little by little, the conversations that you are holding in the privacy of your mind are determining your destiny. Every thought can move you toward or away from your God-given potential. And so it is into this discussion about thoughts and disciplining the mind that today's gospel introduces John the Baptist. John, the son of Zechariah, went into all the region around Judea, proclaiming a baptism of repentance for the forgiveness of sins. Now, the Greek word used for repentance is metanoia. And metanoia is understood as a change of mind, a change of perspective. It involves, yes, a sincere turning away from past wrongdoings and a commitment to a new way of life aligned with God's will. This act of repentance goes beyond, you know, regret and feeling bad for some of your bad actions. In the fullest sense, it is a complete reorientation where we actually put on the mind of Christ rather than allow the thoughts of our wounded ego to call the shots. It is nothing less than a new mind. Now, repentance was the central theme in the preaching of John the Baptist, certainly Malachi, Jesus and the apostles, and it's a subject that is often brought up during Advent and Lent. This radical reorientation towards God all begins, however, with our thoughts. So let's take a closer look at how the mind works. Now, scientists would say that the average person thinks about 50,000 thoughts a day. I don't know how they come up with that, but there you go. 85 to 90% of what we think is either pointless or repetitive or both. So I'm going to say that again because I think that's the most important factoid in the sermon. 85 to 90% of what we think is either pointless or repetitive or both. This includes worrying about the future, you know, projecting possible outcomes of a future that is uncertain. It also includes ruminating about past hurts, past disappointments. And we can never change the past. So thoughts about the past tend to be pointless, repetitive, and sometimes quite painful. Worrying about the future, of course, is useless. And whether you worry or ruminate, it is the refusal or the ability to stay in the present moment. Now, most of us, myself included, are afflicted with this kind of compulsive, continuous thinking about the past or the future. It's a never-ending stream of involuntary thoughts that deplete our joy. Many people are oblivious to this habitual way of thinking, which unfortunately leads them to doing acts and behaviors that are really against their principles. This thoughtless way of thinking has caused great division in our country today. My friends, this ought not to be so. Instead, our mind should be used as a tool for problem solving, for learning new things, for engaging in activities, and for delighting in God's creation. We mustn't allow our mind to be hijacked by useless thoughts, fearful thoughts, and old emotions that deplete our joy and deprive us of an abundant life. And for our own spiritual healing and for the health of this nation, it is time to take charge of our mind rather than allow our mind to take charge of us. So, how do we begin the process of disciplining the mind so that the mind of Christ can take precedence over the wounded ego, which perpetuates wounded thoughts? How do we take control of our thoughts so that they work for us? Here are three insights that I find helpful in my own journey to repentance. First, strengthen your consent muscle. Now, if you want to develop an upper body strength, then you need to engage in a practice like weight training, you know, where you gradually increase the weights and maybe do some push-ups or pull-ups. And likewise, if you want to strengthen your mental consent muscle, then you can decide that you want to engage in also a practice which is called mindfulness. This is a way in which you decide which thoughts to focus on and which thoughts to discard. This is how it works. So once you notice a distracting thought, you need to ask yourself, do I want this thought? Is this helpful to my well-being? How does this thought or cycle of thoughts make me feel? Next, you need to make a conscious decision to let go of that thought. The most difficult part of this practice is to catch the thought in its infancy before it turns into a distraction or a full-blown emotion. And like strengthening our muscles for physical fitness by lifting weights at the gym, we can strengthen our consent muscle through the practice of mindfulness. When I'm plagued with a thought that is negative, or I am rehearsing a painful experience, I try to nip the thought in the bud, and I say to that thought in my head, or sometimes even out loud, oh, painful, persistent, past, pointless. Put it away. On the other hand, if I'm worrying about the future, an event that hasn't even happened, I expose the thought with words like future, fantasy, foolish, forget it. And sometimes I have to do this repeatedly before the thought disappears. Number two, guard your heart. To guard one's heart means to avoid exposure or attention to negative environments. For instance, if a person is beginning the path to sobriety, the last thing he needs to do to meet his friends is to go to a bar. If the fear-mongering ways of the news is making you angry or anxious or despairing, then you need to shut it off as a way of guarding your heart. I know since the election that several of my friends are taking a break from the toxic partisan fighting focused on by the media. Remember, if you do not have agency in making a change, then it makes no sense for you to rehearse and rehash all the evils that can befall our country. Instead, there is something you can do. Act decisively in promoting justice according to the gifts you have been given. For myself, instead of rehearsing all the negativity in the political sphere, I take action by writing to my elected officials. I send money to those organizations and leaders that are promoting justice and civil rights. And I preach prophetically, speaking the truth to a culture of lies. And since we are all up against the forces that use bigotry and lies to entrench power, it's going to take some time, patience, and tenacity to change courses. So don't get discouraged, and do not let your thoughts rob you of your joy. And third, the practice of prayer. There are three types of prayer that can help us diminish negative thinking. The first is mindfulness meditation, which involves simply staying in the present moment. For instance, the only thing that is happening right now is me speaking up here while you sitting there listening. That's it. That's your reality. Mindfulness meditation includes practicing things like contemplative prayer, yoga, counting the laps as you swim, so you're focused on the present moment, or focusing on your breathing as you're walking out to your car or on the beach. Mindfulness, meaning staying in the present moment, is necessary in order to nip those thoughts in the bud that are not being useful to your well-being. Another prayer is the prayer of gratitude. If thank you is the only prayer you know, then that is sufficient. Practicing gratitude can transform negative thinking into appreciation for all the blessings that we actually do have. And finally, there are arrow prayers. Arrow prayers are short prayers that are uttered when it becomes very difficult to move beyond the thoughts and emotions that we don't want, those kind of thoughts that are keeping us captive. So some of the arrow prayers that I use are things like, God, come to my assistance, or grace, grace, grace. And sometimes I say the Jesus prayer. You see, we live in a society that is fearful, cynical, and negative. We have a tendency to nurse old wounds. Our minds are being goaded by a news media that highlights everything that is negative. Our biology is wired to focus on danger, threats, and negativity as a survival tool. If we are ever to attain peace in our world, the world needs more people who are conscious, mindful, and careful thinkers, people who are committed to the journey of repentance. And remember, your mind is a garden, your thoughts are the seeds. You can grow flowers, or you can grow weeds.